on this morning, and we are going to open a work session on House Bill 3028, and last ask the administrator to tell us what the Dastrey amendments propose.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3028 came over to the Senate A in growth, and we have A3 amendments in front of us. What the A3 amendments do is they reinsert into current law the ability of a state agency to exercise its power to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens. What's significant in that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, is the aim and growth measure deleted from the list on welfare of citizens. And this A3 amendment reinserts it in the statute.
The desire of the chair to move the A3 amendments. So that was the desire of Farm Bureau, and they brought the A3 amendments to correct the major objection that occurred on the House side, since they are proposing this change. I would accede to their desires and ask that the committee move the Dastrey amendments.
Mr. Chairman, do we have any indication that the listed sponsor of this bill is that
the listed sponsor working with Farm Bureau on the issue?
They've agreed.
They've agreed.
And Mr. Chairman, I move the A3 amendment. A3 amendment through House Bill 3028.
Senator Miller has moved the A3 amendment to House Bill 3028. Discussion? Senator Barr?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to figure out what the bill does.
A little confusing to me. It changes the presentation format there. It's very obvious that they've moved the state agency from the forefront of the section, the subsection 2 of section 1, and put it at the foot of it by the amendment, the Dastrey amendments. The that's a little more than that. It takes out the city, county, and our political subdivisions.
No.
Take out state agents.
Uh-oh.
At the end of the sentence.
Yeah. Okay.
Just a picture from here and then.
Yeah, I see. Better to delete these. Now that I've got a gross version here.
Trey, would you get that read this memo?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So paragraph 2 under section 1, as amended with the A3 amendments, reads, nothing in this section is intended to limit or restrict the lawful exercise by any city, county, or political subdivision of its power to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of the state, or to limit or restrict the lawful exercise by any state agency to its power to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of this state. Excuse me. When the A-Gross version came over to the Senate, welfare of the citizens was removed from the bill. And what this amendment does is reinsert welfare of the citizens. Its effect on current statute, as written, is to essentially change, separate state agency out from city, county, or political subdivision to specifically state that nothing in the section will limit or restrict the lawful exercise of agency powers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Barr, is there any significance in when you take state agency out, you take welfare out of the string of health, safety, and welfare for cities and counties and put it back in for state agency? That's what's the amendment. Is there any significance to that?
My understanding is that's where the testimony and opposition came from, that's from the state agency sector.
Well, the objective, it doesn't look like it does anything.
It doesn't look to me like the accomplished the deal.
Nothing would be an appropriate word.
Nothing?
But
let Senator Duncan share this bill.
Folks, you see anything?
Is the opposition to this true?
I would there be?
Well, I don't know. I
Well, we don't have any anyone signed up in opposition. Do you want to speak against it? Are you opposed to welfare and safety?
So the net effect is we've added about 8 words to the statute. That's a good bill.
So this is kind of the fear and works of the Freshman and Folly Party.
Did we move the APA race?
No.
I moved it.
You did.
I did it, yes.
You did. Any objection?
Ordered. Move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Mr. Chairman, please. Senator Miller has taken a load off my back.
Has moved House Bill 3028 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Clerk, call it up. As of my.
I guess.
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah,
this truly would be the perfect bill for Senator Duncan to carry since under his criteria it does absolutely nothing.
I think that would be a reach.
Unpleasant bill.
Since I turned somebody's water so I'm not carried all the way.
Law and sausage.
Chair will carry. Close the work session, close the morning session of Senate Rules and Elections, open the evening session of Senate Rules and Elections, open a public hearing on House Bill 2540. We have witness list. Right. We've got somebody with a signature. Lang. Yeah. Larry Stein. All right. Outreach Northwest. That should have been easy, but I some people write like doctors and others like lawyers and Jessica and Tom Barrows, and we've got them all here at the table at once. Briefly as you can, explain to us why we need this.
My name is Larry Stein with Outreach Northwest. Chairman Starr and the members of the committee, we need this bill because of LCDC ruling that has disallowed any youth camps to be sited in forest and farm forest zones in the state of Oregon. If this bill does not pass, we will lose the ability to work with young people in those settings. And this includes Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, YMCA, any type of youth organization that does camping. And it is an extremely important bill for the youth of our state. And we see it as something that absolutely must go forward.
Questions? Senator Byers?
Aren't most of them there in those kinds of locations now?
Yes. They are.
They get there and can't now.
Well, there was a ruling that has been enforced because, as I guess our application to site a camp in Crook County, Oregon, kicked it off, that LCDC came down with a ruling that says these camps are no longer. What happened is there is a definition for destination resorts, and there is a definition for campgrounds, but there has never been a definition or a distinction for camp. We've always been lumped in with campgrounds, but we don't fit the definition of a campground. We have facilities for people to stay in. We don't fit the definition of a destination resort by virtue of what we do and how we do it. And the facilities, by and large, that we have for people to stay in. And so we found ourselves sitting nowhere. And so we were being lumped in with destination resorts, whether we had tent decks or cabins. And so, therefore, we were not allowed to be sited in a forest zone because we were called a destination resort. And so that's why we needed to move ahead and get this changed so camps can finally have a distinction that fits where we already are anyway.
I've been heavily lobbied for this bill and no opposition. Any more questions?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jessica Harris. I'm representative of the Marine Corps office. We just would like to say we're very much supportive that this bill represents a compromise by several different parties and is supported by the Department of Land Conservation and Development as well. They're looking forward to doing rules on this.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Barr.
If I might ask, the original bill had a definition in it. Camp that included a local government, state local government, public benefit. That seems to be gone out of this one. Are they in this? Was there a reason for that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, what we found is there were really several parties that came to the table that were very much in disagreement about what is a youth camp and what is not a youth camp and what constituted a camp. Is there a bunch of tents or is it actually buildings? And we couldn't come to consensus on all the definitions of what a camp is and what a camp is not. And given the timelines that we were under on the House side, we realized that the best thing for all of us to do would be to allow for a longer rulemaking period. All the parties have agreed to that. It just feels that's a better way to go at this point in time, allow more time for everybody to come to agreement.
So you're assuming that under the Section 3, which says the LCDC shall adopt rules, that they'll take care of the definition?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that is correct.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tom Barrows, representing the Oregon Cluster of YMCAs. Briefly, we have one concern about line 15, 16, and 17, which said the rules shall allow the siting of a single caretaker dwelling in conjunction with the youth camp. There was a concern that Camp Collins in Multnomah County, which has two existing caretaker dwellings and was looking at building a third down the road, might be taken out of the running with this. It's our understanding that a letter from LC, from Chris Crean, we hoped it would be here, but it will be coming, which will clarify that existing camps are grandfathered, so it would not impact that. But we wanted to make sure that was on the record. So so if there was concerns about that, we would have something to go back to later.
Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Miller.
I'm wondering whether or not that language that says the rule shall allow the siting of a single caretaker dwelling, does that necessarily mean you couldn't have a second? Because as sure as I can have one, it means you couldn't have two.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, I'm not sure.
We'll just hope they're listening and provide more norm.
Thank you very much. That was a closed public hearing. We're going to open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I would just comment that this is, there is a lot of interest in my area on this, and just looking, I was trying to find out what people would might object to. All the camps, the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Campfire Girls, all the camps that I know about in Wayne County, at least in the area, are all in force zones, so I'm not sure why there would be an objection to this, or why there's ever determination. I would move approval of House Bill 2540.
I got lots of...
Let's go into the work session. You want to...
Yeah. No. What I'm saying is I'll accept your motion. Removing
the bill with the due pass.
Senator Byers moved House Bill 2540 to the floor for due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Byers.
Aye.
Senator Brown. Senator Cortman.
Yes.
Senator Norman.
Aye.
Sheriff
Norman. Aye. I receive the necessary majority. House Bill 2540 is moved to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Carrier.
Senator Byers. Okay. Close the work session on House Bill 2540 and open early. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1295. And we have John McCauley.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John McCauley, representing the Oregon Association of Mortgage Brokers. I first want to express my appreciation to you, Mr. Chair, for your patience and courtesy in allowing us to bring this bill forward on June 10th. We understand this is unusual, but we have been negotiating with various interested parties on this measure for a number of weeks and have finally reached a resolution that are embodied in the Dash 3 amendments. And those Dash 3 amendments would replace the entire bill. I'm going to introduce Ed Tromke, an attorney in Portland who has been handling those negotiations, to report on what the bill does and why it is needed.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. During the course of the negotiations, which extended on some time, we thought that it might be a sunny day here in Salem by the time this got to a hearing, and here it is. So, sorry that you folks had to be inside the whole day. The 1295 was originally introduced to have substantive changes, but after some discussions, the Oregon Association of Mortgage Brokers concurred with the state consumer or business and consumer affairs department to address these during the intersession before the next legislative assembly session so that the substantive provisions can be worked out. We had such a difficult time with this small one that it's going to take some time. This bill, the actual language of it was proposed by a plaintiff's attorneys and affects the civil liability of mortgage brokers and mortgage bankers to their customers in the event that a litigation results. The actual language was put together by Mr. Gary Byrne, who's a member of OTLA, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, and it does solve the problem to the satisfaction of OAMB, and so we've decided to use their language. It does what we had hoped, which is to cut off some liability. There was a young lawyer here in the state who used to regulate mortgage bankers and mortgage brokers with the gentleman in the back of the room who do that for a living. And he knew enough about the bonding statute to know that he could fit in a claim for half-due rent on a mortgage broker's bond. And because the mortgage broker was in a violation of the mortgage banker, mortgage broker law, applied to the bonding company for payment of past due rent, and the bonding company decided it had to pay. Obviously, if general creditors can apply for what is not supposed to be a general creditor's bond, an absolute liability bond, then those bonds are going to become expensive or unavailable, especially to the smaller mortgage bankers and mortgage brokers in the country, or in this state. Across the country, mortgage brokers lend about 70% of the mortgage loans on residences, and so they're an important part of the industry, and the competition helps keep rates down. We think it would be in the best interest of the consumers as well as the industry to make these bonds readily available, keep the cost of them down, and this bill would do that by making sure that the kinds of damages that the plaintiff's attorneys and the industry and the state agree were originally intended to be covered, which is loss of money or loss of property in a mortgage broker, mortgage banker transaction, and not for failure to pay other bills, failure to pay alimony, other sorts of things, which could be covered under the statute the way it's now written. So we would ask that the you pass the dash 3 amendments in order to close this loophole, which has just come to light. Thank you.
Questions? Senator Barr?
John, these are consistent with the other changes we made to mortgage banking regulation earlier.
That's right, and Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, Senate Bill 44, they are, or they don't affect that.
Thank you very much. We have two other mortgage brokers signed up. Amy Murphy?
Mr. Chair, if I might, there, we're all together, and if you've got enough information, they probably don't need to testify.
I appreciate that very much. Appreciate the opportunity to public hearing, open work session on Senate Bill 1295. Move the dash 3 amendments.
I would, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Miller moves the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 1295. Any discussions? Any objections? Hearing none, the floor.
Move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Miller has moved Senate Bill 1295 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye. Senator Steve, the necessary majority. Senate Bill 1295 moves for the due pass recommendation. Carrier? Senator Miller will carry it. Thank you. Open public hearing on House Bill 3378 and witness list. And Christopher Ramba.
Would you like our kitchen meat?
Sure would.
Thank you, Chairman Starr. My name is Jeannie Robinson. I am the chair of the Oregon Pioneer Cemetery Commission. This is the vice chair, Christopher Rumbaugh, We're asking that there be amendments to House Bill 3378. The current wording of the bill would abolish ORS 97770-779, abolishing the current commission and would be replaced with a new statute to create a new commission. We would like to ask that the consideration be made to instead amend the current statute so that the current commission can continue operating. We'd like to bring to your attention that we are moving from the Department of Administrative Services to State Parks and Recreation Department. They have not requested that the current commission be abolished and they be allowed an opportunity to create another commission. We also would like to point out that such a change would cause an unnecessary interruption in service to Oregon citizens who are concerned about our cemeteries. And again, that the requested changes can be made by amending the current statute rather than repealing. The rest of this testimony is telling a little bit about what we do. We've included a copy of a proclamation from the governor. We're very pleased that he has proclaimed that August of 98 is Cemetery Education Month. This is to do with Oregon is hosting the National Conference for the Association for Gravestone Studies. The commission was involved in the beginning of that process, and we're very pleased with that. We also have included a copy of a letter that was sent out last week regarding a cemetery in Umatilla County that is being threatened by a neighboring landowner who has moved the fence and is raising horses, many of them who are trampling over graves. So we have written to these people asking that they acknowledge those graves and hold off a little bit until a cemetery association can be formed to act as a voice for that cemetery.
Thank you. We, if you have any questions, I'm going to ask that these witnesses step aside for a moment and bring up a couple of our representatives from the House side of the building, Representative Mannix and Representative
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Representative Kevin Mannix from Salem.
Yeah, I'm Representative Larry Wells, south of Salem.
We appreciate the opportunity to speak to you in regard to this bill. Senator Miller probably remembers that 2 years ago when I was a representative, I prevailed upon him to allow me to proceed with some legislation to establish the Pioneer Cemetery Commission, and I was proud to do so at the time. So I was the sponsor of the original legislation establishing the Pioneer Cemetery Commission. The commission has been in effect. I'm also now the sponsor of House Bill 3378, which is in front of you, which came out of the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law with, as I recall, a 7-0 vote. I think all seven members were there, certainly unanimous, passed the House floor 57-1, but which still has opposition from a couple of members of the commission, which is unfortunate. The part of the bill has to do with some substantive changes to cemetery law, which nobody appears to oppose, and which I won't go into detail, but which basically allow us to go after cemetery vandals more effectively, and to go after those who would steal artifacts from cemeteries and trade them. Those provisions seem to have engendered no controversy. Another part of the bill which seems to be generally supported is the transfer of the operation of the Pioneer Cemetery Commission from the purview of the Department of Administrative Services to the purview of the Parks and Recreation Department. This seems to be appropriate since Pioneer Cemeteries is outdoor locations are, and since the Parks and Recreation Department is engaged more and more in some heritage preservation. They have a commission on our historical heritage, which is trying to work with them on preservation, and that ties in with some of the issues that relate to Pioneer Cemeteries. The controversy, which I will call a tempest in a teapot, has to do with the fact that we are changing the nature of the commission from one appointed by the governor to one appointed by the director of Parks and Recreation. And the commission members are concerned that this means that somehow there's going to be some terrible lag in, of time and getting up to speed and so on and so forth. Well, as the members of this committee know, a a commission which is appointed by a director of an agency does not need to go through senatorial approval. It's not an independent free floating commission at that point. It's working with the agency, in effect, as an advisory entity. The Parks and Recreation Director can appoint a new commission immediately effective July 1, and if the current commission members are qualified to serve, they can certainly prevail on the Director of Parks and Recreation to appoint them to continue to serve as commissioners. The reason for this is twofold. First, objectively, with a shift, with Measure 66 funds now available and with Parks and Recreation getting more into open space and acquisition issues, it's appropriate for Parks and Recreation to be more closely aligned with the Pioneer Cemetery Commission and to have that commission within Parks. It's also appropriate to have the Director of Parks have a team on board that the Director can work with on these issues, always subject to legislative oversight. The second reason has to do with what I'll call, frankly, a bit of a fresh start. Commission Chair will disagree with me on this, but I've seen some internecine warfare developing in the last year or so, and I've been subjected to some of that personally, which I've found somewhat offensive the last few months, in which it seems to be a divide-and-conquer approach towards dealing with Pioneer Cemetery issues. I find that highly inappropriate. I find that the vast majority of people involved in these issues want to work together for common goals. But I've been subjected to some emails which I've seen which attack me personally and which question my integrity for even proposing this change as though somehow I'm interested in building up some kind of a great advantage to myself. And I mention this only because you may have had some of that email shared with you, and I do find it offensive, and I'm saying so in the presence of the chair of the commission. I've also had a conversation with Chris Burris, the governor's staff person today about that, and I suggest he look at the propriety of the commission chair engaging in email attacks on the integrity of a member of the legislative assembly. I don't want that to be the focus of your inquiry, but I want to bring it out in the open. The fact of the matter is I occasionally do help cemeteries with legal issues, and the chair of the commission has chosen to make that sound as though I'm into some sort of empire-building thing. Believe me, it's maybe 1% of my practice. I have a real interest in Pioneer Cemetery. The vast majority of the work that I do in that area is pro bono, meaning I don't get paid for it or I get paid a lot less than it costs me to do it. I do it because I enjoy it. Be that as it may, the reason for the fresh start is to let the Parks Director see what kind of a team they can assemble to work on behalf of Pioneer Cemetery. The bill does expand the membership from 5 to 7 and does set up for staggered membership, and again, there can be immediate continuity as to the Pioneer Cemetery Commission. I'd invite the current members of the commission to, if the bill passes and it's signed by the governor, to apply for membership on the renewed commission. I would hope then that we can get a fresh start on doing some of the good things that have been done and continue to need to be done on behalf of Pioneer Cemeteries in the state. I would add finally that one of the other things the bill does is it does change the status date for qualifying as a Pioneer Cemetery. A number of cemeteries recommended that we have some sort of a date that starts earlier, and so we moved it back to February 14, and I don't have it in front of me, I believe it's 1909, mm-hmm. which fits in with the anniversary of statehood going back to February 14, 1859, trying to tie it closer to cemeteries that truly were found in terms of the death of pioneers who may have been buried there. And with that, I thank you for your time this evening. I hope you'll support this dynamic little bill, and I turn it over to my colleague.
Yeah, thank you, members of the committee. Again, Murray Wells. I have really not been an active participator in this issue, kind of a bystander a little bit. We do have a Pioneer Cemetery, and so we have been interested in the activities of this commission. And I've appreciated the work that Representative Mannix has done through the years in working with this group, and I really, I respect his interest in the issue and his knowledge of the issue, so I'm here really supporting him and what he has done on this bill. We have seen, of course, this legislative session, the activities of around this one issue of changing who's on the commission, and it has been a really down to a knuckle bones battle, unfortunately, over this one little issue. But I think we've moved this far, and I would hate to see now that part pulled out of the bill. I think it's going to work best if we can move it to the parks and start over with new people, or necessarily a chance to at least appoint a new commission. It doesn't have to be new people, but I think that would work best, moving to the new agency and let them, they're the ones who are going to have to work with these people, and I think that would be the best. It's kind of like when you have a change of administration. Sometimes when the superintendent leaves or the pastor leaves, all the assistants leave, because it's, that way there's opportunity to start over with new people. And so I think this is a I think this is the right way to go. That way parks can pick their people. So I would urge your support. We have a lot of interest in this group. We hope we can go ahead and do some good things for Pioneer Cemetery. You can read the testimony that we passed out showing our interest. There's also a letter here from Jack Smith. And as I understand, he's supporting the bill the way it is now, and was active, I guess, what, years ago in this whole issue, and shows his address. And there has been, I think, on the whole, good support for the bill the way it is, and I would urge you to move it ahead like it is without amendment.
Any questions? Senator Miller. So that I understand, the if the park and rec department picks this commission, it is entirely possible that they could pick one or more of those who are currently serving on the Pioneer Cemetery Commission.
Chairman, Senator Miller, that's entirely
possible. This isn't wiping, necessarily wiping out the board if the parks and rec think they're doing fine, though. If they find work.
That's correct.
Also, the other thing, you mentioned it briefly, Representative Mannix, was the date here. It was fascinating to me that the one or more of the remains of someone born or died February, or this, I guess, in the existing language, January 1940. I would think an awful lot of cemeteries would qualify, and not the best particular problem. I just noted that
if I may, Mr. Chairman, Senator Miller, in fact, some commercial cemetery enterprises advise that they would prefer the earlier date because it makes for a more representative group of true pioneer cemeteries. And although there's no negative to being considered a pioneer cemetery, it's more accurate, and that's why the dates moved back, and we're not aware of any opposition to that.
And the 1909 date was the product of deep thought.
60 years from statehood. The lifespan of a person who was around at the time of statehood didn't go more than that on average.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Senator DeBar.
Representative Manis, on page 2, section 9, the definition of plan, I think I know what I mean having read one of the letters. We dealt with the issue of the plats and the plans earlier on with the surveyors, and it was quite a controversial issue on the Business and Commerce Committee. I guess if we were, if this only applies to cemeteries that are no longer full, that's not the way to say that, no longer taking new residents, there's probably not an issue, but I can conceive where you could have a cemetery that had the remains of some people who met the date but still is active. In fact, I think there's some in my community.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, actually, that change of terminology does apply only to cemeteries, and the unfortunate thing is that the current law looked more towards surveyor kinds of plats and those kinds of plats, and that threw off what was really supposed to apply to cemeteries as a plan. They can use a plat if they wish, but the current statutory language was too narrow, and the Mortuary and Cemetery Board reviewed that language and recommended that change, so that you had more room to maneuver at the cemeteries in terms of what had to be filed. But we're not aware of anyone from the surveyor community, for example, or those engineers who have any problem with that, because this is limited really to recognizing some old plans that exist.
So you're saying this doesn't apply to cemeteries that are currently operating?
Actually, I can't say that, Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer. If they had some old plans in place, they could still utilize them. But if they're designing some new areas now, for example, they would have to go through the regular process.
The chair may remember this, Senator Miller. We had a large discussion on this, and very complicated, and I think it was the county surveyor from Clackamas County had brought in some plans that showed some of the lots being underneath roads and underneath existing buildings. And I'm reluctant to until someone who is familiar with the other one takes a look at it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, if I may, the Attorney General's office took a look at this, and this they saw this as being severely restricted to situations where that cannot be the kind of problem that's involved. The Mortuary and Cemetery Board also looked at it, and that language change has been out there for some time now. And there are a number of folks involved in cemetery work who are surveyors too, and nobody has objected to that particular language as to cemeteries. The problem having to do with it is just a layout for grave sites.
It's more complicated. At least where we had it explained in committee.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Senator Barr, I realize that the terminology flat would suggest to you that that word should never have been used in the original because it does have a lot of meaning to it, and here we are talking about a layout for grave sites.
Well, that's what we were talking about. Mr. Chair, I'm concerned that we maybe have LC to make sure that this is consistent with what we did earlier in the session to build this past. I think it's past level two. I don't know if you remember it or not. I've run a couple of days on it. And I just don't know enough about the details. I just would hate to spend so much time on that. And the only thing I remember from it is it's very complicated.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have two witnesses that were before us before have not had you conclude your testimony. Thank you. We have Jim Lockwood here with the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jim Lockwood, Government Relations Manager, Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. I will be brief. There are many good things in this bill. We have kind of a Johnny one-note issue, and that is simply the funding. We and Representative Mannix and Representative Weld are aware that we can work very well with the bill the way it's drafted. We're just concerned that we get sufficient funds to support the activity in the department because whenever we take up a new project, we like to do it right. That's all. And so, but we don't have any challenges with the intent of the bill other than that.
Rufus Quintas, please.
I don't see a fiscal impact statement.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, we had submitted one to the legislative fiscal officer that was carried along with the bill, and they had a difference of opinion. So at this time, there's an intent to put some money in the emergency fund to support the activity, and it's just the issue of how much. We had said $106,000 for the biennium. The legislative fiscal office last said approximately $29,700, and so the difference has been just that. I know at this point in the session it sounds like a grain of sand, and we understand that. That's why I don't like to make, to draw too much attention to it. But you know, $100,000 here, $100,000 there, pretty soon it's real money, and I think I've said enough.
Well, if you drop the bill and you end up with no money at all, are you going to be happy?
No.
They would like some money. All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, before you leave, Jim, I guess one of the questions that I think the other, we've talked a lot about the director may appoint existing members. Have you had any discussion on that? And how likely is it that the director would just appoint, if there's a new commission, all or some of the existing members for continuity?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, it can always be risky to predict your boss's behavior, but I think that we are new to this business if it comes to our department, so continuity would be of value, and just the general bias off the start would be to have some folks carry over, and of course there's an expansion of two new positions, so there's automatically going to be some new folks. So I know that there'd be a desire to have some experience and there's an expectation that people named to the activity to the commission have knowledge and so on right there in the bill. So I can't imagine any circumstance under which we wouldn't have some folks that were from the existing commission carrying on.
Might it be possible that you would take, I don't know how many of the five are still there, you might take all five and just add two new members?
It's a possibility. My understanding is that Representative Mannix left it so it was somewhat flexible, that it could go depending on, there's a process in there for recommending people to be named, and so to kind of start off with the wide open possibilities and then kind of weigh what the best option was as all the different names with their different backgrounds were distributed on the table to see what strengths and weaknesses they had.
Other questions? Again, thank you very much.
Thank you again.
We have Monty Kaiser and Sean Smith.
And committee, my name is Bonnie Kaiser. I'm from Portland, and I'm here representing the Oregon Historic Cemeteries Association. And what I would like to speak on today is to concerning the part of House Bill 3378 that abolishes the Pioneer Cemetery Commission. And what I have handed you is simply taking the Oregon Statute 97.770 through 779. And putting in the changes in bold type that this new bill would envision. And what I would urge you to do is, rather than to repeal the present statutes, is just to amend them. Add 15 people, as that would be as called for. Change the date to the Pioneer Cemetery. But rather than abolishing the commission and leaving our cemeteries unprotected for a period of time, and according to Representative Mannix, it's debatable what that period of time would be. I'd rather see and urge you to simply carry and make some amendments to the present statutes and carry over the continuity of the protection of our cemeteries. I am associated with an older cemetery in Portland, and I am constantly being afraid of what the land developers are going to be doing. And this is a watchdog group that I find to be a very viable voice for the cemeteries. And I would, you know, I really urge some continuity to occur there and urge you to amend rather than repeal the statutes. I also am in support of the present. I have attended several of the meetings of the commission and in support of the people and the expertise that they represent. And I would hate to see any of that lost. Thank you.
Question? Senator Barr.
The Oregon Historic Cemeteries Association, how many cemeteries do you represent?
We represent between 85 and 100.
And how many there are in the state?
There's just been a new record of how many cemeteries there are, and I don't know that number. It's just been brought out on print, I believe, and I haven't seen a copy of it. There are several that aren't even registered with anyone because they are not functioning, they're not operating, they're not doing current burials. They are truly the pioneer burial spots. So I would say 2,000 to 3,000, just off the top of my head, that I would be aware of.
So your group represents active cemeteries?
Active and inactive, both.
And your memo says that you're the spokesperson. Were you elected or appointed to do that?
I'm the secretary of the group. I just recently taken that office.
My condolences.
No, it's a wonderful association. I've been belonging to it for quite some time. So I found it very, very of a great assistance to us in our my own cemetery.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Sean Smith, and I will just speak very briefly to the letter that was distributed by Representative Wells from Jack Smith from Oregon City. Jack Smith is my father and could not be here today. He's stuck in Oregon City. But my dad was in the cemetery business, the monument business, for most of my entire life up until very recently, and fought for the passage of similar legislation as this twice, once in the 1975 legislative session and once in 1989, and was unsuccessful, although he tried very hard, and this bill represents a great bulk of what he tried to do, and it was his dedication to this issue and public service in general that led me to be involved in politics. And I can think of no better way, especially with Father's Day so close, of honoring him by urging you to support this legislation.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Mr. I wanted to ask Sean the same question. Your father's letter said he's the former president of the Pioneer Cemetery Association. That's different than the one that his sister just spoke to. Do you know how many people that group or how many cemeteries that group represents?
I do not, no. That was it was a 501c3 that he established way back before my time, and I'm sure it's inactive right now, but it was an attempt to organize some of these cemeteries along the lines of what the former speaker's group has done.
Thank you. We have the fourth bill that was passed through the House 7-1. That's the bill is unamended from the House. Let's close the public hearing, open work session on House Bill 3378.
House Bill 3378 to the floor of the Dupass recommendation.
Senator Miller has moved House Bill 3378 to the floor with a Dupass recommendation.
Mr. Chairman. Having made that motion, I'm mindful of the concerns that Senator Beyer brought up regarding Section 9, and it would be my hope that in the intervening days between the passage of this bill in this committee and its reaching the floor, we can see whether or not LC or other parties have a concern, and if that's the case, then maybe we'll get to see it again here.
Well, I appreciate that, and particularly concerned as the chair has two plots in the historic cemetery on West Union Road in Washington County, and they're still unused. Hopefully for some time.
Hopefully they're not under a road or a building.
They're not. I know where they are. Any further comments? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye. Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
I received the necessary majority. House Bill 3378 moved forward to pass recommendation. Carries. Appreciate that. Thank you. Senator Courtney will carry. And we got open a public hearing on House Bill 2661. Jeanette Martell. Is that right?
This is one of your favorite things.
Oh, no.
What's this?
Sure.
I'm
Every group wants education.
We need an amendment, too.
Good evening, Chair Starr and members of the committee. My name is Jeanette Bartel, and I am the administrator for the Oregon Board of Architect Examiners. I am here today on behalf of the Architect Board to relay their support for the Dash 2 amendments to A. N. Gross House Bill 2661. An increasing number of states are requiring architects to demonstrate continued professional development in order to renew their registration. 13 states now require architects to complete some training to update and maintain their professional skills, and at least 11 other states are currently considering legislation for continuing education. The board supports the concept of continuing education. However, they are opposed to the current language in the bill, which establishes guidelines for a continuing education program that appears to be too expensive to implement. The proposed amendments to House Bill 2661 would allow the board to set parameters and guidelines by rule for the development of a cost-effective continuing education program. Further, the amendments would simplify the language while addressing national and local practices for reciprocal licensing. The Board of Architect Examiners urges your support for the Dash 2 amendment to facilitate continuing education requirements for the continued, for the continued professional development of the Oregon Registered Architects. At this time, we would also like to publicly express our appreciation to the representatives of the Architects Council of Oregon for their acknowledgement of our concerns with the bill and for their good faith efforts to address those concerns.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Barr.
Gee, as long as we're talking about continuing education, under the current work of the board, are architects required to do any continuing education to familiarize themselves with changes in the Uniform Building Code?
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, no, they are not.
Gee, wouldn't that be a good one, since that's the biggest problem that we seem to face in having plans rejected?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, it would seem to be appropriate.
You spoke to the Dash 2 amendments. We have the Dash 3 amendments.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, the Dash A3 amendments before you are actually the amendments that we'll need to adopt. The Dash 2 is exactly the same as Dash 3.
I'm sorry.
The technical, we need to get an A in front of the 2. Instead of getting A3, we need to do that.
Okay. Sorry about that.
A3 amendments.
I can't do this. Can I follow up?
Please.
Is there any discussion ever on the board about maintaining competency in terms of architects staying up to date on the building code?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, there has been some discussion on continuing education requirements and not specifically on staying abreast of code requirements or codes. I believe that that would be a part of the continuing education guidelines, a part of the requirements.
Part of the guidelines that you would publish?
That we would propose, correct.
I mean, in all seriousness, I'm working around the issue. One of the things that's the biggest frustration, and I know it's a frustration that comes up in plan turns around that is that frequently architects are not aware of changes in the code and their plans get rejected and all that, and it's not the most glamorous part of the construction industry from an architect's perspective, and it ends up costing their clients lots of money. And I suspect it's just they would just rather not look at that boring stuff like making their buildings comply with code.
Mm.
Well taken. I would offer a further suggestion. In continuing education, the architects should all have to serve an apprenticeship on roofs.
Yeah. You sound so much like father from the construction industry.
There's nothing that's so frustrating as having a roof design
or specification that's designed to fail. And I do many such. I'd be glad to see
you. We can load this up.
All righty. Further questions? Close public hearing. Open work session.
Move forward to do pass recommendation. No, you've got to move the amendment.
The A3 amendment. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Move the bill amendment forward to pass recommendation.
House Bill 2661 has amended and moved to forward to pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
Yes.
It really would be useful to have that continuing education.
Aye. I received the necessary majority. Chair will carry this bill on the floor.
I would hope as you develop the rules around this that you would seriously some requirements that they annual or biannually come up with education or building code issues, because that is a real problem.
I have better rules.
Huh?
Setting rules or
we would be developing a program that would basically include life safety issues and code issues, and they would need to meet certain hourly requirements.
Exactly right. Adjourn.
Sorry.
Committee.